Lori Houston's News for the Heart is dedicated to helping you give a voice to your own soul. Our hearts have the power to free us from pain and the struggles that keep us from awakening to our true essence. Join Lori now as we delve into our heart and soul to find the path that will open us to the possibilities and lead us to the life we love to live.
And good afternoon. This is News for the Heart. And today I have Tom Campbell with me, my awesome co-host that we talk every month, the last Tuesday of every month. And, well, we're moving into love month, so we thought we'd talk about that. I didn't know really how to do this one because we'd sort of been chatting before and trying to figure out, you know, how do we come up with something that's a little bit different. So going by my experience, which has been, you know, a year, almost a year. I mean, certainly, I think the 23rd was when we had our first patient zero here in Toronto or in Canada. And so we weren't really on lockdown until March 13th. So it's been, you know, a good almost year. And I'm a single person. So we talked about relationships. How do you have a relationship when you are single and on lockdown for the past year? So we thought we'd start with that and see where it goes. Should be interesting. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Okay. All right. Well, that is an interesting topic.
We talked some about the fact that, you know, if we're going to do relationships on Zoom or, you know, online, how do you sort of create a relationship? And I was sort of saying, Tom was talking about the fact that, you know, long ago, it used to be getting, you know, being pen pals for a long time. And I was like, well, that kind of leads a relationship all in your head. And then we sort of talked about the fact that most relationships are in your head. So anyway, let's go with it. Let's see where we go with this.
All right. Indeed. So what is it, you know, about, you know, relationship that's so important? Well, it is very important. That's the primary means by which we grow up, right? Connecting to other people. That's where we get challenged. That's where, you know, our buttons get pushed. That's where we have our optimum opportunities to grow up. Because when you're in a relationship, if that relationship is going to be a good one, a productive one, then it's going to be about giving, not about taking. So that's a challenge to most people, to make it about giving and not taking. That's real hard to do because we, you know, have a lot of fear, which gives us ego and beliefs, and that tends to make us more self-centered. Well, when you're self-centered, it's more about taking than it is about giving because it's about you. So most people, I'm talking about the, you know, the 95, 80, 90, 98, you know, percent of people, when I say most people, you know, most everybody, maybe even the 99.99, I don't know, but a very large majority is mostly self-centered. Mm. And now they don't see themselves that way. And most people will hear me say that and they said, yeah, that does apply to a lot of people, but it doesn't apply to me. And they think of the fact that, well, okay, this is about myself and that's about myself, but that needs to be about myself. After all, that's who I am. I am myself. So a lot of my choices and things are going to be about me because I'm me. Yeah. Who else is going to make my choices? So self-centered people never see themselves as self-centered because their self-centeredness is seen as natural, normal, and essential and has to be that way. There isn't really any other rational way to act than the way they're acting now. So being self-centered is entirely invisible. It's only when you outgrow that self-centeredness that you look back, you know, your hindsight becomes a lot clearer and you can see exactly why that self-centeredness was a problem. Rather than foresight looking forward, you can't see that your self-centeredness is a problem at all. It's just natural. It has to be that way. So it's a hard thing for people to get their heads around because they, although they can see it in others, that everybody out there is trying to manipulate the world to be the way they think it should be. All right, well, that's self-centered. The world needs to be the way I think it should be. But of course, my thoughts and thinking how it should be are giving thoughts. It's about other people. I know what my children should be doing. They should be studying hard, getting good grades, being polite. You know, I understand what they should be doing, and I understand what my spouse should be doing. They should be doing this and that. I understand what I should be doing, and I'm doing that fine. So everybody has an idea how the world should be working. And in their mind, that idea is not one that's just about what they can get, but it's what's best for other people. But it's their view of what's best for other people. And the problem is they think that their view of what's best for other people is what's best for other people. And that's not necessarily the case. Matter of fact, that's seldom the case. That's the exception rather than the rule. So that sort of, you know, defines the problem of where we are. So let's talk about this relationship thing. So relationship is about getting to know somebody, beginning to understand who they are, what they are, their likes, their dislikes, their interests, all of these things, the kind of personality they have, and interacting with them. People who, you know, fall in love out there in physical space where they rub up against each other, you know, not digital space where they just look at a screen and see each other, they tend to spend many long hours in conversation. That's just part of the getting to know you. There's lots of long hours of conversation.
Hopefully.
And they're very, you know, they're paying very rapt attention to each other in that space, particularly trying to find out what the other person is. And am I going to be compatible with that person? So that's what the falling in love is mostly about, getting to know that other person. Because generally you've heard me say, we don't fall in love, we fall in need. Mm-hmm. Because we are self-centered people and we have needs. And we want those needs to be met, because when they're met, we feel good. When our needs, we feel satisfied and we feel good. So we run into people, then we hope that we find this relationship where they make you feel good and you make them feel good, because if you both make each other feel good, then that's a really good, positive relationship. So if you're building relationships around resonating with each other's needs, it's not really about love. You don't really enter it thinking, no, what can I do for this person? How can I be of service to them? You enter it in, well, I wonder how good we match, you know, if I get my needs met, and if they get their needs met, then that'll be really great. The two of us will be a good couple. So we fall in need with each other, really not in love. And most of that is trading information about who we are. And not just intellectually, because we have to spend enough time with that person that we see how they really are, not just their image. Because most of us walk around in an image, and that's who we present ourselves as. But you need to spend enough time with that person that you see past the image. You see beyond the image. You see what they really are inside. Well, that's what we think. That's what we think we're doing, right? But we usually are seeing their image. We believe that it's what's inside after a while, because it's consistent. And we've seen them in times when they're happy. We've seen them in times when they're sad. We've seen them when they're angry or when they're this or that. So we feel like we know well. Okay. So all of that can happen digitally. None of that requires, physical contact. Touching. Yeah, physical contact doesn't require that. It just requires time. It can't be done in a casual meeting, you know, one time. It has to be over time. But it can all be done digitally, because it is just communications. That's the 90% of it. Hmm. Now, of course, eventually, you know, physical contact's good, you know, kissing, making love. These things are part of relationship. But we tend to put those things ahead, probably in our culture, a little more further up front than we really should. because what that does is plays more to that image again of who we're playing. That has us back in our image. It's better, and the relationship will become firmer and more solid and more lasting if you do that upfront getting to know you part a lot longer, deeper. The relationships that really last a long time, typically those two people were friends long before they were lovers. Typically they knew each other, connected with each other, talked with each other, and knew each other often for years before they became physically entangled and were lovers. So it typically works out better that way if the sexual part isn't started, you know, like on the third date, you know, or whatever, because that new, you know, it puts a whole new dimension to the relationship that could be very good if most of us were very honest and upfront and in tune with ourselves sexually. But most of us aren't. We live in a culture that is just neurotic as it can be about sexuality. And because we live in that culture, we tend to be neurotic about sexuality too. So two people then start having sexual relationships. All this neurotic stuff starts to get, you see, and that doesn't help the relationship grow, particularly if the relationship's only, you know, three or four dates old. You know, that gets in the way now. Suddenly there's this commitment, you know, yeah. It changes everything. And now it becomes more about having sex than getting to know you. Now you get together to have sex, not really know each other any more deeply, not become more bonded with each other, but to have sex with each other because you've got drives and instincts. And well, nothing wrong with that. It's just that relationships that last need to have depth. And the sexuality generally doesn't provide that much more depth to the relationship. It provides another dimension, and it's a wonderful dimension, a necessary dimension. You know, I'm not saying that the sexuality is not a wonderful thing. It is. We're humans, and that's part of our, you know, of being human. We have instincts, and we should stay in line with those instincts and not get crossways with them. So sexuality is a very important part of a relationship, but if it's, you know, it comes up in the first 10% of the relationship, it often gets in the way and it prevents that relationship from progressing the depths of the getting to know you, getting connected with you, who you really are, who I really am. It kind of gets in the way of that because the sex then dominates. Then the relationship kind of, you know, struggles on however it is. And then it doesn't last a real long time because it never really got that deep anyway. It was more driven by both people's needs than it was really wanting to be together. So you see, in a way, developing relationship over Zoom digitally is not a bad way to go. You can develop that, but it takes, you know, it takes time, and you have to learn where do you go to meet people, you know, on Zoom, because you have to go to some place that's social. Well, I'm not young and in the market for, you know, new relationships, but I know there are places like that. I know three things every month where they're just get-togethers. People who are into growing up and spirituality and science and whatever their issues are, they all come and hang out and talk with each other. And it's open like all day from 6 in the morning till, you know, 10 or 11 o'clock at night kind of a thing. Because we want it to be available to people in all sorts of time zones. So we keep it open for a long period of time. And hundreds of people show up. And most of them are interested in spirituality, growing up, whatever, all the MBT stuff. But I'm sure that's the only thing I know about because that's my world. But I'm sure there are other such places in other people's worlds that are like that. If not, create a space. You know, invite all your friends, you know, to chat about things, you know, what's going on, how's your life been, that sort of thing. How are you dealing with the kids being home and having to homeschool them? You know, and be there for each other. Oh, my cat died. You know, well, it's good to have friends around when those things happen. And when those things happen and kind of dig yourself a hole, crawl in the hole, you know, put a lid over the top and feel miserable, you know, and then you degenerate into self-pity. Oh, woe is me. You know, it hurts. It feels so bad. This is not the way I want my life to be. Again, thinking in terms of the need to have it the way you want it, rather than accepting it as it is and dealing with that in a positive way. Those are two very different things. So find a social situation, people that meet about subjects you're on sailboats. And I'm sure there's a bunch of people who sail on sailboats that get together on Zoom for some reason, you know, and we'll go join that. Or I don't know what, but I'm sure they're there because this much time when people have been forced to digital, you know, toward digital interactions, those things are starting to blossom, I'm sure. So find those, meet people, talk, but don't join them with the idea, oh, I'm going to find a girlfriend or I'm going to find a boyfriend, because now you have an expectation. Now you are trying to manipulate something to happen. You've got a goal. Just go there to interact, just to meet people, just meeting people. And that's the thing. So you may be in that group and there may be a little old lady in that group who's in her 80s and she's just as cute as she can be and she's a whole lot of fun and you just kind of like her. Well, good. Spend time with that. It's not that you pass being anybody's girlfriend at 80 years old. But meet people that you can enjoy, that you can chat with. Because that 80-year-old has a granddaughter that's just your age, you know, or something like that. And things tend to work out. But you have to stir the pot enough that the probabilities that the things you want can actually happen. When you're in your hole with the lid pulled over it, the probability that you're going to meet someone while you're in that state. Definitely. But if you get out and just talk to people, not with any goal in mind, just being social and seeing how can you help? Oh, how can you comfort the person whose cat died? You know, how can you do this or that? And it's just talking to them and just being there, just give them somebody else to talk to. So if you go into the social space, not with a goal of what you want to, what's in it for me?
Right.
You see, very self-centered. If you approach that social space of what's in it for me, here's what I'd like to get out of this. Now let's see how I can get it. Oh, you know, that person looks interesting. You're trying to force reality to give you what you want. Self-centered. But you go into that space with a lot of people here. Some of them are probably nice people. Some of them probably not so nice. But, you know, I'll see which ones. I'll just chat and talk. And in the beginning, it's small talk, of course, because you don't know them. But you talk and you'll find people that you like. And, you know, if you do that, I'd say within a couple of months, you'd have 3 or 4 or 5, 6 people that you really like and you spend time with them. And now you can just connect one-on-one on Zoom if you want to, or you can connect with them, you know, once every 2 weeks or form another little group. I know in the groups I'm familiar with, there'll be groups of 5, 6, 7 people. There's little, what do they call them? Breakout rooms. And you can create a little breakout room. 5 or 6 people can get in there and talk together. And some of those groups of people started meeting, you know, like twice a week. They just had so much to say to each other and they become really good friends. So there's lots of people becoming good friends with people they've never physically, and that those friends are actually in many ways more satisfying and better than the friends they make in the flesh. Because it's the way they approach it. They're not approaching it with goals. They're not approaching it with pheromones. They're not approaching it with, you know, how attractive are you? You know, they're not working from that angle. They're approaching it as just people of all ages, of all types, of all persuasions. You know, some of them are, you know, brain surgeons and some of them are truck drivers. You know, it's just all sorts of with an open mind. And that then gives enough possibilities, you know, that creates possibilities to where the system can actually work with you and you end up with someone who becomes your significant other. because you've given, you know, you've set up uncertainty, possibilities, things can happen within that group. You just bounce into people who do need each other. And the system will steer those people around, will give them a little nudge. Yeah, you should join this. And you should do that. But you don't give the system anything to work with if you stay home, dig a hole, and crawl in it, you see, and feel miserable. The system's got nothing to work with it. So mix it up socially. Go find places where there are people you can join. And even if it's just a group and it only has five or six people in it, that's okay. Just chat with them. Talk with them. Because they know people. And you know people. And pretty soon, others will come in and join, and some will drop out. And it's just a fluid sort of thing that you can socialize. It may not be fast. You know, it's like, okay, I'm going to go to this party and try to find someone to hook up with and, you know, leave with a date. Well, that's very self-centered. It's very driven. It's very focused on an outcome. And it generally does not lead to great relationships. It leads to superficial relationships. And you had mentioned that the online relationship would be mostly in your mind. Relationship is mostly in your mind. Our reality is how we interpret the data. And if we really, really want the data to say this, we have a tendency to interpret it that way, whether it's like that or not. And where we get information that's contrary to what we want, oh, we make excuses for it. You see, it's not really, that can be excused. That'll change. You know, we make up all these excuses. So our relationships are generated in our mind anyway. But if pushing at them, if the relationships aren't being pushed to have sex, pushed to, you know, do this, do that, and so on, then they can develop more naturally and more deeply. And, you know, what I'm saying is not just, you know, the fact that digital relationships can be good, but these general rules should be on all relationships, even if you meet people at, you know, flesh to flesh parties and places and so on. It's the same way. If you go to a social gathering in the flesh and you go with, what am I going to be able to get out of this? You know, I'm looking for a girlfriend or a boyfriend or something. You generally won't find anything because you're going there with the wrong attitude. You have to go with the idea, I'm just going to meet people. And people that I enjoy and have fun and like being around, well, I'll spend time with those. Just that simple, you see. That leaves lots of possibilities open for you to really run into people that you really connect with deeply, which is where good relationships are. So in a way, being forced to go digital because the face-to-face, you know, is unhealthy these days, being forced to go digital should actually create relationships than if we hadn't been forced to go digital. Because that boy meets girl, sexuality is the elephant in the room of what's going to happen next and when and how and why and under what circumstances. And that's the big elephant in the room. And everything kind of centers around that. It's pushed from both sides or kind of in their imagination, you know, where this might go. But they're not really, because they're being pushed by those drives, they're not really spending it up for you. So a couple of years of being good friends preceding, you know, being good lovers has a tendency to run for the next 30 or 40 or 50 years. Whereas when it works the other way around, you know, you first make love and then you decide how much you really like each other. That has a tendency not to last very long. That has a tendency because it's like you've jumped in too deep a water before you learned how to swim. It gets the cart in front of the horse and makes the being a long lasting one much smaller. You don't do it in the right order. That's a problem with our social. You know, that's where our culture pushes us these days. But that's also why, you know, the divorce rates are very high and relationships tend to be pretty volatile, you know, pretty shallow.
Well, I think divorce rates have gone up quite a bit because everybody's stuck at home. But yeah, it mm-hmm. certainly puts a whole new meaning. But let's talk a little bit more about how our imagination plays in love, because I'm really confused.
Well, sure. Well, if you come from a place of need and want and desire, then your reality is how you interpret the data you get. Well, if you're coming from a needy place, how are you going to interpret that data? You're going to want to color it to be the way you want it to be. You're going to see what you want to see, feel what you want to feel, and you'll get all excited and wound up about the possibilities, and it'll be, but it's all inside your head.
Right.
You're making all of that up. It's in your imagination. And that's what leads relationships to get started on a very shallow basis, because both people are making all this up in their heads. And mostly the fact that it's being driven by your instincts, by your sexuality, tends to aggravate that situation, his head and their imagination more. Whereas if you spent more time getting to know each other, then that would be fine. Now you can have a sexual relationship and still get to know each other. That works too, but most people don't do that.
Right.
You see, because the drive is the sexual thing. That's where your instincts push you. The other thing's kind of nice to have, but there's nothing pushing you there. You don't have instincts to get to know somebody well. That's not one of your, you know, instinctual things. Sex is. So when you lead with sex, then the rest of the relationship tends to not get so deep. And when it's not so deep, then it tends to fall apart after a while. So this idea of getting to the sexual part too soon often kind of dooms a relationship to stay shallow, because that's what the center is. Now, if you were grown up, then it would be on your first date and still get to know each other a lot. You know, it's not impossible. It's just for most people, it doesn't work that way. It's not there's anything wrong with having sex on your first date, but you have to realize that that's going to color everything else in a very large way. And for most people, it will make it harder for them to do all the work necessary to really know each other enough that you really like each other at a deeper level, really appreciate each other for exactly who you are, rather than 5 years later, if a partner is, you know, and what their personality is like and where their head is, you know, you find that 5 years later and now it's unacceptable. Well, you should have gotten there first. So it's not that there's anything wrong with sex. Sex is fine. It's just are grown up enough, you know, to deal with sexuality in the beginning in a relationship. Well, if we are, then fine. Sex on the first date's not a bad thing if both people can deal with that. But then, you know, then the sex is not so driven. It's just casual because it's just, you know, that they don't see that as the core part of a relationship.
Hmm.
Okay. So then that might work. But our culture tends to create these problems, you know, and there's other problems too, because there's lots of things centered around sexuality. It's not just driven by our instincts, but it's driven by our culture in a way that, you know, you, particularly females, will start thinking, is it, they just want me for my sex. Is it just about that? Am I just being used for sexuality? And it's not, you know, so they're going to have these kind of misgivings and things that if the reason they have those misgivings is they don't really know the person that well yet. They don't know whether, you know, they're being used or whether they're not. They don't know. So now they have negative misgivings. Well, whenever you bring negativity into a relationship, okay, now the relationship lacks trust. You don't know yet. Well, then you'll just pretend that that's not there. Push it out of your mind. This is what your imagination has to do with it. And you'll just plunge ahead, pushing that aside. You say, but the negativity is still there. The negativity of that is still lurking someplace. The lack of trust is still in there. And it's going to cause kind of like dry rot in the relationship. if you have that negative stuff. Your culture tells you, you should be aware. You should be careful because, you know, you don't want to end up being used. Well, that negativity, that lack of trust, well, a relationship can only get so good because you have that negative there. Well, that's a negative that your culture gives you. You see, but that negative comes out and blossoms because you have sexual relations. That negative doesn't come out when you're just getting to know each other. So you see, that's why I say that sometimes the getting the sex too early in a relationship tends to put it on a course for early destruction, because we don't deal with the things we deal with otherwise. First, we put them off, we ignore them, we imagine them away because we don't want to think about them. Whereas if we just got to know somebody for a while, we'd think about all those things. We'd really get to know them in a deep way. And that may mean that there is some casual sex going on all the way while you're learning about the other person. Well, you know, sexuality is what we're humans. It depends on your attitude toward it. How do you feel about it? If you feel, oh no, I feel like I need to do this because this is my role to play, then that's negative. That lacks trust. That lacks sincerity. That lacks, authenticity. Mm. You see, it becomes your image. And that immediately builds negativity into that relationship. That negativity will sit there and rot that relationship from the inside out. It's just, you have to, if you're going to, engage in sex early in a relationship, you have to be grown up enough to be able to do that and not let that
influence you.
Yeah, create the problem later on, because that negativity doesn't go away. That little lack of trust doesn't care. And you can't let go. You can't just be yourself. You can't open up. You see, you can't give yourself because there's part of you that's wary, that's not so sure, doesn't want to be hurt. So you hold some of you back. Well, you can't have a good relationship like that. If you're holding back and you're not open and you can't give fully and completely, then the relationship's going to have problems. It's not like that. So, you start slowly, you work diligently. Sexuality is going to be a part of it, needs to be a part of it, but don't get the cart in front of the horse unless you can get it back the right way, as you go. It's just most people don't.
Once I don't think we're going to get any negative points in this one at all when we post this.
No, well, they'll disagree.
I don't know. I think everybody's going to agree with you, Tom.
but the key is our whole reality, not just our relationships, but our whole reality is created in our mind.
Yeah.
How we interpret the data. And if we're driven to have the data come out a certain way, well, that just really warps how you interpret the data. And you're no longer living in the same world that the other person that you're connected to. They live in a different world than you do. So just like our politics in the U.S. here, we have, half the population lives in one reality, the other half the population lives in a totally different, it is with most couples.
Yeah.
You have, one person in the couple lives in a completely different reality than the other person. And that isn't, that doesn't work well. That comes unglued. Eventually that falls apart. So that's not a good thing. You always have to be who you are. And the idea is to get develop a relationship where you can be totally authentic. Just be yourself, which takes courage. Mm-hmm. You have to say, well, okay, I got warts, I got problems, I got fears, and I'm going to show them all. I'm going to let them all hang out, and I'm just going to be who I am and see how that works. Because if that makes the other person run away, they weren't the right person for you anyway. The relationship would not have worked long term. So just be authentic, be who you are. Say, well, okay, this isn't rational, it doesn't make sense, but it's me. It's just the way I feel about things. And the other person needs to say, okay, I accept that. That's all right. And here's the way I am. You can do that, and the relationship still works, you got something that will last a very long time. So why connect? Why form a, you know, why become a couple in a relationship where the probability of it going long is low, because you haven't done the upfront work that was necessary before you got in deep to the point where you imagined it to be the way you wanted it to be. And then 5, 6, 7, 10 years later, it not only isn't the way you imagined that it was, but it becomes intolerable. That's the problem. So I see digital relationships getting started, particularly with the physical, kind of pushed off for a while until you two like each other so much that you just, that's not a bad thing, because it puts the physical off a little bit, and that probably works well for most people. Again, you know, I'm just talking about the fat part of the curve. For most people, that's probably an advantage, not a disadvantage. So don't be trapped at home feeling all by yourself and alone, because there's hundreds, probably hundreds of thousands of other people who feel trapped in their home and all alone. And they just love to connect. And the only way to connect safely now is over Zoom or, you know, some other. I mean, there's lots of different platforms, but, you know, connect with people. Find sites, find groups that meet, talk to people. And if you can't find one, start one. Say, look, you bring five of your friends and I'll bring five of my friends and let's all meet. See who we got, you know, see if it's interesting, and have a subject or a topic or something that, or even play a game. You know, whatever. You know, what did you do when you went over to other people's houses, you know, or had little house parties? You know, well, do the same things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's drinking and eating usually, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, you know, if you skip the drinking, that's a plus. That's a big plus. You know, talk about your imagination creates mm-hmm. your reality. Well, if drinking is part of your process, then you're really stoking that imagination to come to the conclusions that it wants rather than the conclusions that are there.
Real.
You know, so that makes it better yet. If there is no alcohol or other drugs involved, the probability of it being meaningful goes up a lot. So, you know, like we've had, Pamela and I have had, five or six house parties with our grandchildren and our children over Zoom. And they've been fun. Games, and it's been a lot of fun, I think, for us and for the grandkids. We keep it fun for them, you know, and keep things at their level. And we chit-chat with each other. And usually after about a half an hour, 45 minutes, the kids kind of disappear. You know, they go off to back to their Game Boy or, you know, their computer or their whatever else they were doing. And then the adults stay there, and we chat for another half an hour after that before we go. But those kinds of things have been really good. And with Zoom, you get all the body language, which is mostly face. You know, it's a little bit stance and other things, but it's about 80% face. You know, so you get that as well as just the verbiage, which, you know, you don't even get voice in a letter. You know, if you're a pen pal, you have a big filter that has to do with how good a writer the person is.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah. An image is even a more difficult thing to control if you're writing. You know, pen pal, image tends to really flow much more easily than reality when you're having to put it into written language. So,
okay, so that kind of puts the single people. Now, what about all the people that are watching this and going, oh, so what do I do now in my relationship? Because we started superficially. How do we deepen it to a...
That's a really good question. Well, the thing that you have to do to deepen it is, if you're going to have to grow up yourself, you're going to have to let go of your ego, let go of your fear, and just be. Just be authentic, okay? That doesn't mean, if you say, well, if I'm authentic, I'll be really angry because, you know, I just feel angry inside, and if I'm authentic, I'll just be angry. Well,
yeah.
You see, first you have to get rid of that fear. You know, being angry isn't going to help any relationship, no matter what the relationship is. It's only going to damage it. So, you know, first you have to get rid of some of that fear, so that you're not just going to be angry. You're not just going to be reactive. You're not going to have your buttons pushed. You're just going to interact in a calm and, you know, significant way of being you, who you are. You're not going to be afraid of being used or abused. You say, I'll just be me and I'll see what happens and I'll say what I think. Be honest as well. So you might tell somebody, you know, these things you do, they really, those things are, you know, the side you part your hair on, you know, whatever, you know, they could be trivial things, but you need to just say, I'm not saying you have to stop them or anything. I'm just telling you how I feel. That's different than saying, boy, I wish you'd part your hair on the other side. See, now you've created a problem. But if you just say, you know, these are things, this is just the way I feel about them. You can part your hair whatever side you want. You know, this is how it makes me feel. And I don't know why it makes me feel that way. It just does. That's me. So you don't tell them there's anything wrong with them. You just tell them how you are, you see. If you start by telling them what's wrong with them and how they need to change to be the way you want them, that's just going to go bad in a hurry. That's not it. You have to be yourself. You have to let them be themselves. And when all that sorts out, you have to decide if it's compatible. And if it's not, then it's time to move on. It's time to, you know, do something different. Okay, so we both have so much fear and ego that we're incompatible. Well, do we just leave each other because to find somebody else who has fear that's compatible with us? Or do we decide to work this out and get rid of the fear? Right. And do it as a couple. Grow up. You see, that's a possibility. So, you know, it's not that, you know, just look and see how it works and it doesn't work, take off. You know, I'm not saying that. It's not that simple. But you do have to turn that corner from just, you know, living the image and being dissatisfied with your life and with who you are and with, you know, your situation, because that negativity will just rot you from the inside and things won't get better. They'll just continue to get worse until they explode. That's typically the way it goes. It just rots and rots and rots, and then it blows up. And then when it blows up, it isn't pretty. It's an ugly thing. So it's better just to be straightforward.
I love it when people say, well, I'm just going to go. I say, well, have you talked with the person and explained what the problem is? Will help. My camera kind of got stuck there, didn't it? I think it's like, wow, that's very evolved. Very grown up.
Right. So you have to realize that, you know, a relationship is created by two people and you are part of that. And part of the way the other person is because of the way you are. So as you'll change, they'll change. And if you start off the whole process with saying, realizing I need to change, I have to grow up. I've got these fears and these fears give me buttons and my buttons get pushed and I get angry, you know, you realize that. And then you have to work, get over that. And as you get better, as you master your buttons and your fears, you will find the other person changes. As you get better, they get better. A relationship can be a really good relationship if at least one of the persons does not have fear, ego, and belief. If you have one person that we say has a high quality of consciousness, then that's all it takes for a relationship to be good. You can have a really good relationship. Now, if they both have a high quality of consciousness, then the relationship can go way beyond good. But it can be good just with one. But when the answer is a particularly high quality of consciousness, both are normal. You know, have a normal quality of consciousness. I mean, they have fears. They have buttons. They get angry. They have wants. They want the world to be the way they want it. Otherwise, they're unhappy and miserable if it isn't. Then that's something that you're just going to have to work on. And if you can work on it together, or if you can even succeed by yourself, you can still have a good relationship with somebody who is not so grown up, because you know how to give. You don't have buttons. And even if they get upset and they get angry, that's all right, because it won't make you upset or make you angry, because you're not reactive. You can just let them, you know, go through their rage or do whatever they do, and, you know, be nice, and it'll pass, because they're, you know, their ego will settle down, and you can go on and still have a good relationship, because you don't connect to the negativity. You don't connect to their ego. You kind of have outgrown that. So even if you just fix yourself, the relationship can be good. You can enjoy all the good parts about that person and totally ignore all the bad parts, because they're not really all that important anyway. The only reason they're bad is because they interfere with what you want in the way you think it should be. Well, when you give up that, what you want in the way you think it should be, there's no problem anymore. It just is. You just accept people. Well, that's the way they are. You know, they're just, those are the kinds of things they do. That's the way they are. It's okay. I love them anyway, because they have some really good positive qualities, and those positive qualities make the relationship good. And those other things they get into, well, that's just the way they are. It's okay. It's not a problem. You say, get upset, that makes you upset, and you're getting upset makes them more upset. And pretty soon, two people are screaming at each other, or they're screaming at each other without making a sound, you know, inside. They're angry, but don't show it. And that negativity tears up a relationship at the roots, until eventually the roots are so rotten that it explodes. So that's the way it is. So if you're already in a relationship and you didn't actually get to a deep place before you got to the sexual part, then you can still get there. It's not like it's impossible, but it's not going to be easy. You're going to have to work at it. You're going to have to take some time, and don't be impatient with yourself. It's going to take you a year or 2 years or 3 years to do this. But the good news is, it's exactly what you're supposed to be doing. That's why you're here. You're here to grow up within that relationship, because that relationship is going to challenge your ego. Your ego is going to want to stand up and scream. But you get rid of that ego, then your spouse is your best teacher. You can see your spouse as that person that pushes your buttons, and you're going to dismantle those buttons to where they can't be pushed, and not by stuffing things under the rug. You know, I'm so angry, but I'm going to smile anyway. That doesn't make a good person. The smile has to be genuine. It has to be heartfelt. It can't be your image. It's an image of dealing with your buttons. Yeah. You really have to deal with them to where that stuff really doesn't bother you. And you can just let it roll right over you and never touch you. Then, you know, you have grown up, which is your mission. It's what you're supposed to do. It's what you're here for. So then you can say, well, I've got a difficult partner. And if I grow up with that partner, I'm really going to be grown up when I get to the point that, you know, I'm not annoyed with that partner. Well, then consider that partner your teacher, a very demanding teacher, that every time you let one of your buttons show, they're going to punch it. And you need to say, yep, okay, I got to learn that lesson. So in that case, you think, oh, woe is me. I'm the one that has to be the high quality one. You know, I'd rather have it the other way. Then I'd get my way more, but no, that's what you're here for, is to grow up. And growing up is not simple. It's a hard thing to do. It takes effort, time, energy, dedication. But it's worth it, because once you're grown up, you're happy all the time. People don't stay home or do other things. You know, you don't get stressed. You're just a happy, positive person. So now you've taken a life where you were stressed, done some hard work, and now you have a life that's full of joy and peace and satisfaction. And you can get a lot of satisfaction out of being with that person and their good side. And the bad side, it's just the way they are. Not a problem. You see, so that's what to do if you're stuck here in the middle and didn't necessarily do it all, you know, the best way or the easiest way from the beginning. You just have to grow up, find those fears, get rid of them. And every time you have a negative emotion, say, oh, there's a fear. I'll be having this negative emotion. I shouldn't be feeling this way. Try to be open. Try just to give to something instead of feeling, yeah, but I might just be being used. I don't want to give too much. You know, they'll just take until they use me all up. No, they can never use you all up. You've got more and more to give. Just give it. Don't worry about getting used up. You can't be used up as long as you give it openly and will, you know, willfully. You want to give as much as you can. You can't be abused that way because you want to. You're only abused when people demand things you don't want to give, and then they try to take them, you see. But if you do want to give, it's really hard to be abused at all. So open up, let the fear go, give, and see what happens. You'd be surprised how that'll change the behavior of your mate. Your mate will act totally differently. It's this contest between who gets who, you know, with a long scoreboard of wins and losses and ties and that sort of thing. And you just need to break that. You just need to get out of that mindset. Just give yourself to the other person. Be what they need. See how that works. See if you get angry and upset. Well, you still have a lot of ego. But if it actually does get abusive and they start, you know, slapping you around or something, well, it's time to go then. Because now the, you know, you shouldn't have to deal with that. But if the abuse is mostly, it is for most people, they feel abused, but nobody's really slapped them around. Nobody's really done this or that. So you're just afraid that they might, or afraid that they will. You see, that's where most of the abuse is. It's in people's heads. It's not actual. When it becomes actual, then it's time to move on because you've tried, you've worked at it, you've given, and it just doesn't work. Then it's time to move on. Change the relationship. But make sure that you learn from that relationship so you don't make all the same mistakes the next time.
Because you know there's going to be a next time and it's going to be the exact same thing, if not worse.
Exactly. If you don't grow up, if you don't learn from the mistakes, particularly if you go into the next time full of fears, more fears. Oh, it didn't work out last time. It didn't work out because of this and this. Now you have all these fears and intrepidations in there. Well, that's just going to almost guarantee a disaster. Yeah. Because you can't give with all that fear and mistrust. So if you bring that fear and mistrust to the next relationship, you might as well just destroy it with your own fear. You have to come to that next relationship just open and giving and entirely, you know, care about the other person and see how that works out. And it might work out, it might not. But when you are giving like that, you optimize your mate's probability that they will grow up too. As much as you are withdrawn and not so sure and don't want to give but so much and you have these intrepidations, you make the probability that your mate is also going to be holding back and not giving and fearful and so on. Likes attract like in that sense. So you create that. The very thing that you are afraid of, you create in your mate with your fear.
Because it's all in your head.
Because it's all in your head. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because your reality is in your head. You live in a unique reality that's created by you. And you can create that reality to be fun and positive and happy, or you can recreate it to be miserable. It just depends on how you interpret the data. So if somebody says something really rude to you, and maybe it's your mate, your spouse, and if that really hurts your feelings and makes you angry, then you've just thrown gasoline on that fire. You're going to make it worse. And eventually it'll get so bad that it'll explode. And then you'll either live together grudgingly because it's better than the alternative, or you'll part. See, neither one of those is a very good solution.
Right.
So you let things be. Let people be who they are. Somebody says something rude, instead of being upset because what you interpret it means about you, how dare they, you just have to say, well, that's what it means about them. That's just right. What they think. It doesn't have anything to do with me. That's them. That's their reality that they're living in. You know? Right. Doesn't have to do with me at all. And how can you be angered by something that has nothing to do with you? Well, you can't. Then you're not angry. You see? And when that other person says things and you don't get angry, then it kind of takes the wind out of their sails. Because they're gearing up for a fight and you don't want to fight and you're still happy. It just pulls all their energy out of the conflict. And now things are more easily resolvable. What just happened here? So if you change who you are, it will definitely change who your partner is.
All right, well, you've been listening to News for the Heart. We'll be getting the heart of what matters with Tom Campbell and Love Month and, how to build a deeper foundation, both before and after. Thanks, Tom.
You're welcome, Lori. Thank you.
Have a question for Lori and want to be on the next News from the Heart show? Drop us a line via instantfeedback@bmajor.org. News from the Heart is brought to you by Intuitive Soul and is produced by Major Radio for Clear Channel's iHeartRadio and bmajor.org.